Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about Colonial Williamsburg, the history and the hauntings, with the historian of Colonial Williamsburg Foundation, Kelly Brennan. Today we'll talk about the haunted taverns in Colonial Williamsburg, including one of the best ghost stories I have ever heard. If you haven't listened to the first part of our conversation, make sure you do. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll continue our conversation about the history and hauntings of Colonial Williamsburg with Kelly Brennan, historian of Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. Now, you can't have any sort of a city without taverns, especially at that time. You know, a tavern would have been a community meeting place. Travelers come through. There's some different taverns.
One of the things I will say, and I really like that you pointed out, it was a community space, but it's really a community space for men.
Oh, that, yes.
But during this time period, it's still sort of a bastion of just men.
And I forget how long Williamsburg has been there.
Right?
Right. So it would have been men, and probably men travelers as well. Maybe if they were traveling with a woman, they might, but I can't even see a woman being able to
Usually what happens if they can find a way that there are buildings for women who travel. Basically, they take short-term boarders, and the women will usually stay in spaces like that. Or what happens very often is everybody's related to everybody else. You might just stay with a family member.
Oh, sure.
The couple might stay with a family member. That was pretty common. But yes, you'd have travelers, but you'd also have sort of the important men of the day. You know, we're talking about, you know, Peyton Randolph or George Wythe might be in one of these taverns, may have, you know, reserved a room for a meal and possibly, you know, a meeting of some kind.
There's a few different taverns there. Now, mm-hmm. a Shields Tavern? Let's talk about that.
So Shields Tavern is actually of the earliest, of the ones that we operate as a restaurant, which is funny because it's the earliest and the latest in terms of how we use the space. It was very active in the 1750s, and it was a very middle-class establishment. So it was one of these things, so it wasn't for the, you know, top of society, but for people who run business, small businesses and the like, this might be a place where they're going to go. People of more modest means when traveling might stay at Shields. Very respectable site, but not quite the same. We reconstructed that building in the 1950s. And we don't open it as a restaurant until 1989. So, like I said, it is in modern times the shortest, been open for the shortest period of time. I like this site in part because the Tavern Ghost Walk, which is the predecessor of Haunted Williamsburg, launched out of this site. I also used to portray first person Mrs. Shields. So I really love Shields.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah.
As Mrs. Shields, what would you say about the building?
Yeah, with the tavern business. Oh, I talked a lot about what running a tavern business was like. And I talk about, you know, how you get food in, you know, making sure that the accommodations are good, having rivalries with the other tavern owners, but to a friendly point, they're almost all related to each other. No, not quite, but a lot of the tavern owners in Williamsburg are related to each other one way or another. At the end of her time there, she's about 40. She marries the guy who owns the tavern a few taverns over.
Oh,
who was very successful. He was a higher end tavern and he was 20 years older than her. But when you're in the same business, that doesn't really matter. Right. I mean, that's not the point. When I portrayed her, one of the things I'd say is we've lived the same life. He's just lived it for longer than I have.
What happened to Mr. Shields then?
He dies.
Okay. So he had died. She's running the Shields on her own for a while.
Mm-hmm, for a little while.
Which is really something at that time.
Well, actually, it's not as exciting as we'd like it to be. One of the other taverns I mentioned, King's Arms Tavern, was run by a woman named Jane Vogue. She ran it by herself and was exceptionally successful, as was Christiana Campbell at Campbell's Tavern, which is not one of the ones I listed. But it's actually like a really viable and potentially very lucrative career for women in the 18th century.
I know, right? You know, you think about all the things women couldn't do, and that was a very male-driven business. Your clientele was all men.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to be a pretty tough woman because you would think a lot of the guys would try to walk all over her or take advantage of her, harass her, all of the things. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to be a pretty tough woman to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be tough now. Even if you're, you know, anybody, a woman running a restaurant is going to be a lot of work because of those concerns about being walked all over and the like. So it's one of those things that continues to be difficult, but is sort of astounding, at least to us in the 18th century, because women's roles were different.
So Shields Tavern, that's on the site of Colonial Williamsburg, correct?
Mm-hmm. And it's on the main drag, Duke of Gloucester Street. Yep.
So now you can go in there and eat?
Yes, but we use it for groups.
Okay.
Basically, they were groups to it. And for years and years, it was open as a tavern, but we decided it was more strategic to open. So it's a very different experience, in part because if you're there, you're there with probably 80 other people.
And I find a lot of times when you're in a room with 80 other people, you're not going to pick up on any hauntings or any feelings because there's so much activity going on around you.
That's funny you say that, because we do have a story.
Oh, let's hear this one.
So it was one of the groups that we really feed the most often in that building is our school groups. We get conferences and the like, but school groups are sort of the bread and butter of Shields Tavern. And some of the dining space is in the basement. And one of the original things about Shields is that it has its old hearth in the basement, and it's gigantic. And we had a kid who was being a real, real pain in the butt. And he was, you know, mouthing off to everybody, the server, everyone. And he's sitting with his back, not quite to the wall, but close. And he's going on and on. And all of a sudden he leans forward, touches, you know, grabs the back of his head and yells, "Ouch." And everybody looked at him. He goes, "Somebody slapped me in the back of the head." And it was like, no, none of us could have physically gotten in the back of your head. So whatever it was really sick of him. And that was in a room where it was, I don't know if that room sits 80 really, but let's say 60. I mean, that was a full room of noisy elementary students.
It feels to me like that's a story of Mrs. Shields or someone like her popping the kid on the backside of the head going, "No, you don't get to act like that." Are there other hauntings in that tavern?
Yes, because we don't think that's a Mrs. Shields thing. she has a stepdaughter who was thought to be, in the little information we have, kind of a wild child. And one of the reasons we say this is we notice that she's not in the father's will. Now, of course, that could mean she died before him, but she doesn't show up. We decided we were going to, you know, look into this. Now, we weren't going to do it scientifically by looking at primary sources. My colleagues at the Tavern Ghost Walk decided they were going to look to it with a Ouija board. It's always fun.
And it's always a great idea.
And it set off like a very strange events. It was my night to give the tours, and I'm outside Shields Tavern. And I start, and my boss, Jenny, and my colleague, Lindsay, come back into Shields Tavern, and they lock themselves in. The front door locks from the inside. At this point, they know they're locked in the building. For a long time, that was the protocol. If you were alone, the building had to be secured just for safety reasons. This is when they decide to go up to the second floor to the Tavern Ghost Walk office and make themselves a Ouija board, because they want to commune with the daughter's name was Frances Shields. Well, very quickly, they had turned a glass upside down to use it as their planchette. And they asked the question, "Is anyone here with us?" And it says, "Yes." And they said, "Do you have a message for us?" And it moves to yes. And they say, "Wait, what is your name?" F-R-A. Front door opens and slams shut.
Oh,
it gets better. It opens and slams shut, and there are footsteps, very clear footsteps that both of them immediately recognize. My footsteps. So my boss thinks there's a serious problem because I should be outside giving a tour. So she comes running down the stairs and she starts to follow the footsteps through the building. The building's got lots of rooms and the like. And she starts following it through the building. The more persistent she was in her following, the heavier and faster my footsteps, quote unquote, moved. And the first floor of the building is kind of a big circle. So she eventually comes back to where she had come down the stairs. And she heard the footsteps come to the room. And when she got into that big room hall, she was by herself. This was the first thing that happened. So Jenny's really angry. She comes back upstairs to the second floor to where they had been doing, playing with the Ouija board. And Lindsay, my colleague, points out the window and just whispers, "Look." Across the street, myself and 45 guests on the ghost tour are happily engaged with one another. It gets worse. After that event, just about every time I would come into Shields Tavern to get ready for work, I'd have somebody in the staff come up to me and say, "Oh, I saw you yesterday." Okay. I said, "Where was I?" They said, "You were in the creepy room with all the broken furniture. I called your name, but you didn't turn around. And now there's something that looks like me." It gets better. I get told this over and over again. I'm told by, you know, I mentioned that big hearth. Next to it, there are very deep closets, and they are creepy. And one of the servers who was setting up said that she opened said creepy closet, looked in. I was standing there with my back to her. So now there's something that can do my footsteps and can look like me.
Gives me goosebumps.
It gets better.
Or worse.
Or worse, depending how you feel about this. So that happened for a while, then it stopped, and I was relieved. 5 nights a week, Shields was a tavern. It was a restaurant. It was open. But 2 nights a week, the tavern ghost walk were the only people in the building. And on this particular night, it was my turn to close up the building. So I go through and I'm, you know, closing doors and I'm locking them and I'm turning lights out and all that. And then I get to the basement. I have to go through the basement because it's the only way I can get out of the building. You can't walk out of one of those other doors. You have to go down through the basement, through the kitchen, through a tunnel that leads to the street, and come up a back flight of stairs. It's the only way you can get out of the building at this point. And when I look down into that inky blackness, I almost panicked. It was one of those things where something that you've done a million times, and this time you have to do it, and there's something not quite right about it. What made it worse was there was only one set of lights for the basement. You know how usually there's one if you're coming in one direction or the other. And I have to turn those lights off, knowing there's no other lights across the way. So I run down the stairs with my eyes closed, which of course is genius. And I get to the middle of the basement and I hear laughter. I turn around and I say, "Who's there?" And a voice says back to me, "You should know by now."
Oh.
I'm racing through my head. I'm racing. Who could this be? And I realized it was my voice. It was mimicking me. And I did the strangest thing. And when I tell school kids the story, they love it because everyone has done this in their lives. I freeze and then I panic. And I look into the corner where the sound voice is coming from. And I just yell, "I don't want to talk about it." I don't know why that's the thing I yelled, but it was. So at that point, I run through the basement. I run through the kitchen. I run through the tunnel. I run up the back set of stairs. I did come into work the next day. And fortunately, after that, we never had another problem.
That is one of the best / worst ghost stories. It depends on how you look at it. That was crazy.
And it gets better. It gets better again. I was training a new staff member for one of our ghost programs, and she's a medium. And as I'm telling this story, I can see her watching something behind me. I'm like, oh no. She comes up to me, not whatever's behind me, Stephanie, the staff member. And she says, "You look just like her." I said, "Who?" And she said, "Frances Shields. You look just like her."
Got goosebumps again.
I still get creeped out sometimes. And I've told that story for years.
That would be a really unsettling feeling, though. You know, what you experienced with someone talking to you.
Yeah,
and
that was creepy.
I can't talk about this. And then when someone tells you look like her, I would have a hard time sleeping after that. I mean, is that something that stuck in your brain for a while?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still tell the story. So it does pop up in my brain every once in a while. But I will say, because I told stories, even at that point, I told stories for 5 or 6 years, because I've been doing it so long, it takes a lot to scare me now. I mean, something's got to be really scary.
That one would have been pretty scary for me. I think that could have been at the top of the scary list. Now, what about the other taverns in the area? You mentioned King's Arms, and there's another one, Chowning's or Chunning's.
Yeah, Chowning's.
I'm not sure how to say that. Have you had experiences in those? Are those buildings that you can go into?
Yes.
People have had experiences in
those. Those are both restaurants.
Okay.
Those are both restaurants. Once again, the tavern dining experience is going to be very, very different depending on what tavern you're at. King's Arms kind of operates kind of like a steakhouse in terms of what its menu looks like. It's a reconstruction. Actually, all of the taverns are reconstructions. And like I said, this was one of the ones that was ran by a woman in the 18th century. Very, very successful. This place was popular amongst the very, very elite. So this is a George Washington 8 here example. And it runs, you know, successfully for a long time. And eventually, you know, it's used for other things and the building eventually disappears. But when they reconstructed this building and the building next to it, they decided to connect them so they'd have more dining space. The original, well, the reconstructed building of what was the original was very small, frankly, by our standards. So we built the second house right next to it, which was built, which people find interesting, but I don't have a ghost story associated with. That second building was built where in 1850, the town undertaker had built a house. Now, he never lived in the house. It was a rental property, and he never built coffins on the house, but people seem to really enjoy that. And I think that goes sort of the stacking the history on top of it, mm-hmm. even though we don't have a ghost story associated with him specifically. In 1951, it opened to the public as a restaurant. And when it did, we were introduced to, not immediately, of course, there was a very talented, but very strict, I was talking about women still being tough, this was the 1950s, manager of the tavern. Her name was Erna. Sometimes when you see the ghost stories, it's listed as Irma. It's not. It's Erna. We have her obituary. So we know that for a fact. So she lived in an apartment on the top floor of the party house, the second part that was built. And she died unknown to the rest of the staff. And I think it's 1958. And they had to like break into her room to get her. And almost immediately there was paranormal activity. Almost immediately. She liked to move things. She likes to open windows that are impossible to get to, things that are sort of in a stairway.
She's opening windows that you can hardly get to close them. It's like, okay, you opened it. Now can you please close it?
What I get the sense of, if she was very exacting, I get the sense, it's kind of like getting the slap in the back of the head, the kid at Shields.
Right.
If things need to be run a certain way, and if they are not run a certain way, she's going to make it known there's a problem. And I think that's sort of just pride in her property, pride in her work. And she was known for having very high standards, very, very high standards in terms of what people did and the service they would provide. She doesn't seem to be as active, but I think part of that is because the staff over there really these days is top notch. And I think she's pleased, is why we see her less.
Now, can you tell me a little bit, we referred to it earlier, about the ghost tours you do there at Colonial Williamsburg?
They're in the evenings. They run at 7 o'clock and 8:30. So there's two every night. It runs mid-March through January 1. So it's most of the year that we're up. The thing that makes it, I will say, so I was, like I said, I oversaw the program for a period of time. And, you know, I've got an academic background. And I think we became probably one of the only ghost tours in the country that had a required reading list that was more than just the stories. They were expected to understand things about ghost theory, things about a better understanding of the issue of race and ghosts. So that was kind of, it was a little rigorous.
Okay, real quick, let me interrupt you because I'm very interested in both those things. Ghost theory. What do you mean? What is it that you want them to get?
I want them to understand that different people have there's different kind of ideas about ghosts, which we know, but I also want them to be aware of, you know, what people say about like theories about how to, you know, see a ghost, mm-hmm. how ghosts operate, that kind of thing.
And then the second thing you mentioned was race.
Race, yes.
Tell me a little about that.
Race and ghost tours are becoming more and more examined, I guess I should say. And there's a few reasons for this. One has to do with Black communities and sort of the representation or the stories about, you know, their ancestors, concerns around that. Mm-hmm. You also see, actually, a good friend of mine who's Black told me something that I thought was fascinating, because I asked her, why do you think there are no Black ghosts? And she says, remember, you are taking large groups of white people to a space, and you're there, you know, 5-7 minutes. That's potentially dangerous when they were alive, when these enslaved people were alive. That was potentially dangerous. You know, something could go wrong for them. And I was like, that's fascinating. Another instance, we have another medium who was walking down the street. He had been drinking. He was on Duke Main Street at Colonial Williams. He had been drinking a little. He had been at Tunings. I lived in a historic house that was down the street. So he was walking to my house to hang out for a little while. And as he's walking down the street, he notices a Black man in 18th century clothing sitting on a bench in front of King's Arms Tavern, whittling. So the guy's like sitting there and he's, you know, whittling this stick. And the medium is startled to see him. He wasn't expecting to see him. And he's like, oh. And the Black man stood up, stick straight, you know, completely, you know, straight, serious, shoulders back. And he said, I didn't see you, sir. I'm sorry. Like, he begins to apologize for his behavior, which is heartbreaking. Then this is a good part of the story, though. He says, wait, you can see me? He was like genuinely like, wait a minute. This never happens. But the fact that, you know, that this white man was walking down the street and that this enslaved ghost, he may have even been free for all we know, has this very strong reaction.
Oh, that makes me really emotional.
Right.
It makes me sad. Right. All the feelings. It makes me sad. And
that's podcast. A whole other like episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Back to the ghost tours though. So you do them every night. And when they take a ghost tour, how many do they go into? What's the experience like?
So the groups are about 25 people max. They go to 3 individual sites into which they go inside. The storyteller will tell them stories either about the site. The other thing we do is we tell 18th century stories as well. We tell stories about the site or 18th century stories or whatever it may be in a really spooky atmosphere. And it's not spooky in a way we're trying to do something terrible or awful to it. Like, it's just what the space looks like at night. It is so foreign to us.
Yeah.
The 18th century wouldn't scare them at all. That's what it looks like. But it's so foreign to us. And they go to 3 different sites. And actually, the Peyton Randolph is one of them. The Wythe House is another one of them. There's additional, of course, beyond just those two. The other thing that we do is that as the tour is sort of happening, stories are being told in different, you know, outside as you're walking. The effort is to make it as full of an experience as possible.
You've got a great website, by the way.
There's so much
information there. It's colonialwilliamsburg.org. So you can get information about the ghost tours there. But there's just so much more information there. I was interested in it before you and I talked. And now I'm like, okay, this is like just moved to the top of the list. I really
we can do that. Oh, we can accommodate you. No problem.
I would absolutely love it. This has been so interesting today, Kelly.
No, thank you.
And you might have shared one of the best ghost stories I've ever heard.
Wow.
That one was good. And I hear a lot of ghost stories, but that one was really good. So I want to say thank you so much for your time. And check out the website, colonialwilliamsburg.org.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And like I said, if you want to talk about some of this stuff again, I am more than happy.
Oh, let's do that. Let's do that. I would love that. I'm taking you up on it.
Okay, good.
Thank you so much. And if you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper, sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can try it 3 days free there, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there as well, all ad free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.